You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we stormed Area 51 and all we got were internet points. I'm your host, Justin M. Lazeski, and if you also didn't know what they were doing in those Area 51 storming pictures where they were like running with their arms next to their bodies, it was like Naruto running or something. If you didn't know, you're in the right place, because I didn't know either. None of that made any sense to me. It's just another example, I think, of the 50 people that are on the internet that Michael Bay talks about. Joining me this trip from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, I think that was the only thing that was done during the raid on Area 51 was one hero, one mad lad, and his Naruto run on the news. But, hey, I think more culturally important than the whole Storm Area 51, we had that meme go around about Islam is right about women, which has broken all NPCs who are confronted with it. So I think it's another great 4chan op on the saying the thing that breaks people's brains in the normie crowd. So that's way more culturally significant than the lack of attendance at the Storm Area 51 thing. What do you think, Justin?
Certainly, I agree with you completely. It just, there's so much farce this week. I mean, once we get in the news, you'll see four big stories. And then we had these two other stories on top of it, which were very farcical. I think it's incredible that the people at 4chan are able to figure out what that one thing to say is and then the way to say it. The idea of just posting a piece of paper with black text on it that says Islam is right about women and just posting that in a random town in Massachusetts and that like breaks the internet. Like, that's pretty ridiculous.
I like how the poor white lady called the police. She's like, this broke my brain.
Yeah. I mean, that just shows so much, right? The idea that someone would call the police over that.
Over a sign. Next time, yeah. I see a missing cat sign, I'm going to call the police.
Right, exactly, right? It's not even a sign in the sense that someone put effort into it. It's a sign that maybe took 20 seconds of effort, right?
But probably less than that. I mean, yeah. The guy probably had to buy a printer, because let's be honest, who has a printer anymore? So maybe a little more, but on the off chance he like had a printer like in the closet somewhere, then maybe 20 seconds.
Well, maybe he went to FedEx Kinko's, which, I mean, maybe we should charge them with something for letting somebody print that sign at FedEx Kinko's.
I know, it's hate speech, because it mentions women and Islam, and it doesn't follow the NPC script, so it must be hate speech.
Well, speaking of the NPC script and scripts in general, Daniel unfortunately can't join us right now to read the news and read all about the NPC scripts, because he is sick. He's got a chest cold. You don't want to hear him talk. It does not...
You don't want to hear him talk more than normal, so.
fair. But I think William's going to handle the news. So let's do that in the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
I am still privileged in some way.
Yes, because you're on sick leave. Thanks to our supporters at Patreon. Patreon.com/themidside means we can afford such luxurious benefits as sick leave for our folks. All of your donations help us keep the lights on, and you get access to our super secret channels on Discord, which you can join by looking at the show notes for each episode on themidside.com. So hit us up. Those donations help. So first story, the blackface saga continues. The third instance of Justin Trudeau in blackface surface. So is this three strikes, you're out? I don't know. Let's dive in and see. The first round was enough to badly damage Justin Trudeau's reputation. But now a third instance of the Canadian Prime Minister wearing face darkening makeup has surfaced. The first image showed Trudeau wearing brown face when he dressed up as Aladdin at a theme party at the Vancouver private school where he taught in 2001. Trudeau then admitted to wearing blackface in high school to sing the Jamaican folk song Deo. Now Canada's Global News Network reports that it's found a third instance of Trudeau wearing racist makeup, A grainy video appears to show Trudeau covered in dark makeup and sticking his tongue out. It appears his arms and legs are also covered in dark makeup. A senior member of the Liberal campaign reportedly confirmed it was Trudeau early Thursday morning. So, Justin, where in Alta do you get the racist makeup versus the non-racist makeup? And how do I avoid it next time I go to a Steelers game?
Well, I think that because there are different races who shop at Alta, I think they have different skin tones. So I think you, when you go in from now on, they're probably going to put you in a certain queue. And that's the area in the store you're only allowed to go in, based upon whatever the range of your skin tone is. I think that's how they're going to do it from now on.
So what does a person identifying as a female, such as myself, what do I wear during a blackout game, if not black makeup?
Can you do that? Is that allowed? Like when a team has a blackout game and they're all wearing black shirts, can you also wear black makeup? Is that allowed? And here's another question. What percentage of your face has to be covered for it to be bad at this point?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because
so
they
if
always
I just
wear,
do under the eyes, like the baseball players do, that's probably okay. But how far down before it becomes racist? That's the hairs on the chin philosopher's problem, right?
Right, exactly. And I would even say maybe it's racist if it's under the eyes, right? I mean, I'm looking at all these Patriots Funko Pops right now. They all have black under the eyes. These are kind of racist pops, aren't they not? Are they not?
Well, we all know it's your white privilege, so your Funko Pops are part of your white privilege, so...
I love how that's just the answer. You didn't know what to say, so you just said white privilege. Here's the thing, though, about
this entire
story.
That's the answer to everything.
That is the answer to everything. It is the answer to everything. It's not 42, like Hitchhiker said. It's white privilege. That's the remake of Hitchhikers. The computer's going to spit out white privilege instead of 42. But here's the thing about this entire story is it really worth it anymore to point out this hypocrisy? Right. I mean, we could sit here all day and be like, oh, man, Justin Trudeau, because he's such an easy target to pick on. And it's nice to dunk on Justin Trudeau. But aren't
well,
we to the point now that
he's an election right now. So this is the time to dunk on him.
Well, we're not Canadian, though. I mean, I guess we have a Canadian audience, right?
Yeah. A majority of our audience is Canadian. Hi, Mark.
Right. So hi, Mark. Hi, Conrad. Hi, Tom. All those midsiders out there. They're going to have a Chick-fil-A meetup at some point. At that new Chick-fil-A. I guess, yeah, for them, it's good to know. And maybe we can hear from them. But for us, right, just when we're pointing out these extreme left politicians who are just super hypocritical, I don't know if there's much of a value in it anymore. And also, as far as the blackface, you know, controversy goes, is it something to really, really get that much upset about? I mean, especially, right? I mean, Adam Carolla talks about this on his show. When he dressed up as Mr. T, why is that racist? He's just accurately representing Mr. T. And it's the same thing here with the first picture of Justin Trudeau is he was dressing up as Aladdin, so he darkened his skin tone. Is it fair to get upset at him about that when we said what Adam Carolla said is okay?
I don't know. I think spray on tans are racist. If you go more than two shades darker in the tanning booth or at the beach, that's racist. I mean, every time I go to the beach, I went today, I'll probably turn red because I was, you know, at the beach today. That's probably racist. I don't know which race it's racist against, but I'm sure it is as I turn pink.
Wait, so is that why they think Trump is a white supremacist?
I guess that might be the reason why. I don't know. I mean, how much, like, we always talk about when someone, you know, how litigious people are and how you have to prove damages for things. And who's been damaged by this, right? I mean, I can point to news stories from the last week of, you know, gays being thrown off of buildings in the Middle East and women being generally mutilated in Africa and all sorts of things that if you purport to support women and minorities, seem like a greater harm than something the prime minister or anyone in Canada did 20, 30 years ago.
Right. No, 100%. So a lot of that, what you're talking about, has to do with psychological, right? People feel psychological distress over something and they want to call it harm. But it's also the culture we live in, where everyone's looking for a mic drop, or as I was saying, to dunk on people. It's this social media culture where everyone's looking for that mic drop on people.
Yeah, we keep observing that pattern of the mob mentality, and it's just so transparent now. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's social media and it's so new, but isn't this the same stuff that happened in Rome, right? Like this sort of whipping up of public frenzy for political gain. This is manipulation. I'm sure this picture existed before this news story broke, and I'm sure it was broke because it's the election in Canada. This is just manipulation. I mean, what Trudeau has a big scandal about, I don't know the details, I'm sure our Canadian listeners know more details than I do, but basically he squashed some sort of corruption investigation with some huge construction company for political reasons, and that controversy seems way more relevant than whether he dressed as Aladdin or sang Deo in blackface way back when. Like, his actions more recently are more important to judge him than his ones from in his far distant past.
Oh, 100%. And I'll return to that in one second. But I just want to be honest that I didn't realize the Deo song was a Jamaican folk song until you just read that in the article. So I guess that makes me racist. I don't know. You thought it was a Disney song? I had no idea what it was. I just thought it was something you sang when you were a kid and you wasted your time. You're like, why am I singing this? It actually makes it a little more insidious. But as far as what you were saying is, yeah, that was one of the things that crossed my mind as well, is we've brought this up on the show before. The idea that there can be no growth, there can be no change. He seems to be a true believer of all this social justice crap. So I would believe that he has changed since he was younger. So why now, even though he is towing their line, are people getting upset about what he did however many years ago? Shouldn't it be he grew from that? Shouldn't it be, oh, that's who he used to be, and you're glad that he became a better person? But again, this is all looking to dunk on people, so we don't even know who's really upset about this.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is, but I don't know. We'll.
The manipulation point. Sorry, I just remembered the manipulation point I was trying to build towards, and I just remembered it. That's the important thing to remember. These pictures have been out there for how many years? Who knows where they were? But somebody who is a manipulative person who manipulates the culture got a hold of them and decided to release them now during election season. And that's the important thing to remember, is everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people have things like this in their past, but most people aren't going to go out there and release it because they're just not that type of person. They're not vindictive. They don't want to get ahead by tearing other people down. But there are the manipulative people out there, and those are the people who are attracted to working in government. And that's how the system grows, is these type of techniques.
Yeah. Well, in other news that will hopefully cheer you up, they has been added to the dictionary. Merriam-Webster adds non-binary pronoun they to the dictionary. Merriam-Webster added a new definition of the word they to its dictionary, declaring the pronoun may be used to refer to a single person whose gender identity is non-binary. They is a liberating pronoun for many non-binary individuals who identify as genders other than male or female. For many Americans, the use of they as a singular pronoun can be ungrammatical and confusing. But Merriam-Webster's announcements made on Twitter on Tuesday marked an official stamp of approval on the term that has become increasingly common as the non-binary identities become more visible than ever. Language responds to social change. Things that need to be expressed get expressed, said Dennis Barron, professor emeritus of English and linguistics at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. In recent years, a number of journalism style guides have allowed the gender-neutral pronoun. But in a blog post written before Tuesday's announcement, Merriam-Webster noted that they has been used as a singular pronoun since the late 1300s, and that regardless of what detractors say, nearly everyone uses the singular they in casual conversation and often in formal writing. So, Justin, if that last part is true, isn't Merriam-Webster been missing this since the 1300s?
Yeah, I'm glad you saw that angle. They basically admitted to their own incompetence, right? Because the argument essentially is the dictionary is not telling you how to speak, but it's tracking how people speak. And if they've been using that since the 1300s, well, then they really dropped the ball.
Well, I want to know where the non-binary people were in the 1300s. The ones using they.
I don't think it was non-binary back then. I think it was the common mistake of not wanting to assume people's gender. And what I mean by that is if you're speaking about a hypothetical student, you would say, you know, the student had to write a paper. They went to the library all day on Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's a very common thing people say because they don't want to assume the gender. I've dealt with this for years with students where I tell them just use your own gender because you're writing from your own perspective. Or if you have a super feminist teacher, write from the you know, say she for a hypothetical person. Nowadays Z. It was before it used to be she. Although even then you run the risk of the teacher getting upset with you for saying you're pandering to her or whatever. So it's really a minefield. But this just shows how absurd our culture has become in the language manipulation. We always talk about it. The real truth behind the story is the language manipulation. This whole idea of identifying as gender non-binary and having to have other people call you a certain pronoun is absurd because they complain, right? They complain and they say, and I'm using they as in the hypothetical group of people out there, they complain about gender stereotypes and gender normalization, but then they say they're gender non-binary because they don't fit into those stereotypes. Well, if the stereotypes are bad because the gender shouldn't be limited by those stereotypes, and then you're saying you're non-binary because you don't fit in those stereotypes, aren't you tacitly accepting the stereotypes as true?
You know, that's interesting. I want to get back to the they thing. But imagine if I started making you call me something other than gay, right? Because I don't fit the gay stereotype, so therefore you should call me, I don't know, banana pickle. You know, that my sexuality is.
See, it would have been funny
pickle.
If you said they again because it rhymes with gay.
Well, but here's the thing about the manipulation. I have a bold prediction. Are you ready for this, Justin? We'll check on this time next year. They will be considered a slur, and you should use some other made-up pronouns for non-binary people.
It'll be considered a slur because it's going to be reappropriated by people to make fun of people who consider themselves non-binary.
Exactly. You'll start having people use they like they used fag and gay, and then it'll become a slur. And then they will have a new word. We had this. I don't want to go through all the words, but this is why we use African American, right? All the words that got us there at one point were not slurs and then became slurs and then became profanity, right? You're going to see that same progression with they. So let's check up on it next year.
Well, this goes back to the last story, and this goes back to the whole idea of a tool. And it's how you use the tool, not the tool itself, that is evil. So just like the last one, right? If you're dressing up as Mr. T and you're paying an homage to Mr. T and you're wearing blackface, is that racist? I lean towards no, that's not racist because you're just trying to pay homage to Mr. T. But if you're dressing up as a racist stereotype in a vaudeville show, that's racist. It's the same thing here with this, with words. If you're using a word to insult someone, well, it becomes a weapon. If you're using a word to label someone properly, it's not a weapon. So intent matters, but that's also why we have freedom of speech laws. So you don't just put people in jail, arrest them for intent.
Yeah, I completely agree. So on the concept of free speech, we had someone use their free speech this week. The Sandy Hook parents released chilling back-to-school PSA. The group's back-to-school essentials takes a dark look at the threat posed by guns on campus. An anti-gun violence group connected to the Sandy Hook massacre. Wait a minute. Does that mean they organized the Sandy Hook massacre? Jeez. That's terrible wording. Unveiled a chilling back-to-school
PSA. Did you just
PSA.
Go down the deep state rabbit hole?
Yeah. They wrote this for Alex Jones. That's the poorly worded sentence. That's written for Alex Jones.
They were inside Area 51.
They were connected to the massacre. That's what the sentence says. Unveiled a chilling back-to-school PSA on Wednesday, showing how kids could be forced to use ordinary possessions to fend off active shooters. The Sandy Hook Promise Foundation, based out of Newtown, Connecticut, depicts smiling, happy children suddenly having to employ skateboards, jackets, and cell phones in a life or death moments. We don't want people to turn away from it, so pretending it doesn't exist is not helping to solve it, Sandy Hook parent Nicole Hockley told NBC News' Today Show, which debuted this shocking minute-long video. The PSA, Back to School Essentials, begins innocently and innocuously, with kids showing off their backpacks, binders, and the headphones they're taking to school. Then the video suddenly takes a dark turn, with the PSA depicting scenes all too real to the age of school shootings. A boy told the camera, "These new sneakers are just what I need for the new year," as he's chased down the hallway by a shooter. "My parents got me this skateboard I wanted. It's pretty cool," said another child as he uses his wheels to smash a window and flee danger. "These scissors really come in handy in art class," one girl said, brandishing the blades as her classmate chimed in, "These colored pencils too." Both were standing near a classroom door, apparently ready to ambush an oncoming attacker. So, Justin, what do you think about this PSA? Did you educate yourself on what to do in an active shooter situation?
So, the part of the reason I included this, and if you're in Discord, you'll see we talked about this as well, and I'm going to actually read a Midsider's comment in a second. Part of the reason I included in this is when I initially watched this, I was very curious about what other people's emotional reactions were. Because I laughed at this. I literally found this hysterical, especially the ending. And I'm reading on Twitter all these people that are like, "Oh my God, this was so sad. I cried so much. I was bawling." Like, William, how did you respond to this emotionally when you watched this PSA?
I thought that with some minor edits, this could be a great farce video. It is almost peak farce in the way that this is handling such a complex topic.
That's why I laughed. Yeah. Because to me, it's like they were making the parody of themselves. Like, if you were going to make a parody video of them, wouldn't it be this?
Yeah. So you just changed the music in the background to comedy music, and this could have been a Jimmy Kimmel spit.
So let's read Midsider Morgan's comment about this. I solicited comments in Discord, and everyone thought this comment was pretty good. "I'm not sure what to make of it. I felt disturbed and outraged by the sheer degree of manipulative fear-mongering, but primarily confused by the bizarro comedic tone. What is the real message here? It's back to school time, and you know what that means. You are a sitting duck and are probably going to be shot, so it's up to you to keep a watchful eye on every other student and immediately report anyone who isn't displaying the appropriate amount of social engagement, because only you can prevent school shootings and forest fires, them too. And I thought that was a great point, because one of the things that's missing here is who is the audience, right? Who is the audience? Because presumably this is about preventing school shootings, right, William? Is that what they're going for?
I think that's what they would say they are going for, but that is not... imagine you wanted some particular action to be taken here. All this is going to do is, if someone doesn't already agree with your gun agenda, is just going to galvanize them and put them more firmly into their own beliefs. This is not a persuasion thing. This is for their own fundraising and their own side, quote unquote.
So you think they're aware this is for their own side, or you think they actually think this would be persuasive?
I don't know that it matters. That maybe they are deluded and think that this is persuasive, but this isn't persuasive, right? Like, this is more of the gotcha dunking that you were talking about earlier. Like,
yes,
oh, 100%. They're dunked, right? Those people who believe in the Second Amendment, they're dunked.
100%. The final thing where the girl crying in like the gym shower or whatever, talking about her new cell phone, that's supposed to be like the dunk on it, because it's supposed to be, oh, we're going to humanize this and we're going to show you the real impacts of this. And then the implication at the end of the video is that she gets shot. And that's where Midsider Morgan is talking about being disturbed and outraged at the manipulative fear mongering. The idea that they made the video and they implied she got shot at the end is quite frankly disgusting, is it not?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't look at this and take it seriously. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I just look at this and say, what a misguided effort at trying to convince anyone of anything. This guarantees that no action, like, all I have to do is play this to voters, and if they're at all sympathetic with freedom for gun owners, they will see straight through this as pure manipulation and pure evil. Or they'll laugh, like I did.
Right, well, right. I laughed as well, and that's exactly how I would respond to it. It reminds me of that South Park ad from early on where Harbucks is coming into town and Tweak's dad is trying to stop them so he doesn't lose his coffee shop. And they made that ad like, you don't hate children, do you? Like, that's what that's what this ad was. And it's because they were refusing to be transparent about it. They were trying to be cutesy about it. Wouldn't it have been better, William, from a production standpoint, if as the commercial went on, the kids had to receive things that were more and more relevant to school shootings, with the idea being to say, fundamentally, schools have changed, and what is a necessary school back-to-school supply is different now? And what I mean by that is, once the kid smashes the window with the skateboard, well, now we're seeing that things are being used differently. So then wouldn't you later like want to put a kid in a bulletproof vest and say this is a necessity? Wouldn't that have driven your point home more?
Yeah.
Didn't instead they just decide to go for the emotional manipulation?
Isn't it every boy's dream between the age of like 11 and, you know, 18 to smash the school windows with their skateboard? I'm pretty sure that's every boy's dream. You know, at least every boy in my high school would have loved to do that.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't know, man. I feel bad for the kids who... This was one of Dave Chappelle's jokes, right? How they make his kids do school shooter drills.
Yeah.
And it's like, all you're doing is scaring the kids. And that's what I ultimately see. That's what I was asking earlier. Who is the audience for this? Because it's not the kids. All it's going to do is scare the kids. And the parents, is this really, as you said, it's not going to convince the parents. So it's like the audience is, as you said themselves, it's just a way of dunking on people. It's just a way of getting a mic drop. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's like, say, ha ha, look how smart we are. Oh, we can make this thing that seems super clever.
Well, speaking of things that aren't super clever and transparent, NBC News has published a website where you can post your climate confessions. Even those who care deeply about the planet's future can slip up now and then. Tell us, where do you fall short in preventing climate change? Do you blast the AC, throw out half your lunch, grill a steak every week? share your anonymous confession with NBC News. And then there's a bunch of these confessions. Justin, I don't know if you want me to read some of the samples here, but
Read the categories first.
Oh, sure.
So first we have plastics, meat, energy, transportation, paper, food waste. Those are the categories you can put your confessions under. And before we continue, I just want to point out, William, when did grilling a steak become anti-climate?
Because you do CO2 emissions when you light that charcoal.
But isn't CO2 part of the natural cycle? Don't trees breathe CO2 and then they emit O2?
Shush. You were not supposed to know that CO2 is natural. We're supposed to believe that it's at an all-time high for the planet and that somehow will turn into Venus if it increases.
So yeah, so read some of the confessions and then we'll give our confessions.
All right. Here's one from the category plastics. I still use too much plastic. I think I'm getting better though. Here's one from energy. I live where the temp is regularly 100 plus. I keep my temp at 71, which means the two ACE units in my house literally run all day long. Here's one from meat. I eat beef, and I'm not about to change that. Other than that, I do what I can to help protect the environment. Here's one under paper. I use paper napkins instead of washable cloth ones. Wait, how is that wasteful? Okay. I have one from food waste. I have a compost, but get lazy and not use it sometimes. Let's see if there's any other ones. Here's one from transportation. Normal people can't afford electric cars, so until the costs come back to Earth, I'll keep driving my combustion engine car. Here's another one from a Canadian. Transportation. I'm Canadian. I work out of my truck in winter.
Well, you can just stop there. That's enough of a confession. Yeah. I'm Canadian.
I work out of my truck in winter where we hit minus 50. Work buys me fuel. I don't turn my truck off in December until April.
Oh, no.
Man, look at all these people with their confessions. This is great. So, Justin, what is your climate confession?
I mean, I'm alive. That's my climate confession. I mean, if you look at these categories and you look at everything people are saying, you literally would not be able to live. I mean, think about that Canadian guy. Ignoring the fact that he's Canadian, he literally, to do his job, to survive, he needs to use his car and he uses to use the heat, and he's confessing about that? This is all so weirdly Catholic to me, William.
Yeah, we've talked about the guilt involved. That's a sure sign of manipulation, and when people try to use guilt in this way. So climate guilt. Which is greater right now? Is it white guilt or climate guilt?
This website, because I'm shocked people use this website at all and submitted these at all. Part of me is convinced these are all a giant troll. But let's assume
I'm going to write mine right now as we're doing it. I'm going to energy and I'm writing, I used a website to confess my climate sins. The website uses energy and emits CO2. So there we go.
I can't imagine that comment will ever see the light of day. I'm sure they're using this for some sort of project, some sort of newscast to dunk on us. Isn't this just to gather data to dunk on us and be like, look at how terrible you all are. Look at how much energy you use. Look at how wasteful you are towards the climate. Isn't that what NBC News is trying to do with this?
I don't know what they're trying to do here, but I think it's brilliant. I can't wait to see mine featured prominently on the website. But I think I do. I think that people should protest that this website, all the CO2 that's emitted by the people visiting this website and all the images being served and all those bits flying around the intertubes.
I don't understand, William. I mean, I'm really... This is the story at which Daniel really should have been here this week, because this is the one he would have really popped off at. But just the religious nature of climate change and something that isn't even proven. And it's so religious. And to answer your question from before, I think this website stands as evidence, assuming it's not all a giant troll, that climate guilt is much worse than white guilt. Because yeah. I think when you talk amongst just white people, they don't really have white guilt. But I think people actually have climate guilt.
I don't, you know, it's funny you say that, Justin, but I wonder about that, because I think of where I grew up in a small town, trying to convince the excruciatingly poor people in my tiny little town I grew up in about how they're privileged. They're just immune to it, right? Like, it doesn't work, right? But this climate stuff is more insidious, right? So, yeah, it might be that the climate guilt is, its potential evil is much higher than the whole white guilt thing.
So I clicked, you can click on the categories here, and I clicked on meat, and you can read the comments, and people are responding to this negatively. There's one that said, "I would rather the whole planet burn than give up steak. Kick rocks, hippies." So maybe yours will get published. What did you put yours under?
Energy.
Yeah, let's go into energy and see if yours is there. Scrolling down. Oh, somebody, confessions implies I have something to feel guilty about. I don't. I only conserve electricity to lower my power bill.
Man, that sounds like Alex Epstein's.
So maybe the guilt isn't as bad as we thought.
Yeah, maybe there's hope.
We spent $25,000 on grid connected solar only to realize that due to high monthly fee to connect to grid, system will never break even. So, I mean, that's how it's unaffordable, and shows how it's, you know, even doing the clean energy is not going to work.
Yeah, there's no such thing as sustainable, clean, change-free. We have to change things in order to live. I mean, that is the process of living, is changing
so
things.
So I'm going to rescind my previous comment. I don't think either of those guilts really exist on an extreme level. I think it's an example of this dunk-on culture, this mic drop culture, and it's an example of the last story, the Sandy Hook PSA, where they try to create this air, this aura of guilt, and they want people to feel guilty, because then they think they can manipulate them into voting a certain way, into yeah. acting a certain way. That's what it's about. But it seems like, again, it seems like there's such a divide around all of this stuff.
It's just the mob. That's all. I don't know that there's such a divide, but there is a mob, and the mob, it can be dangerous.
Okay, and when we say the mob, we don't mean like the mafia.
No, no.
I think I'd rather the mob come back. I think that might make for a better society.
Pay protection from the mob to the mob?
We need the mob to protect us from the mob. It's mobs all the way down. All right, so we're talking about maybe there's a little bit of hope in this situation. Let's talk about something else that can make us hopeful in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off. When I wasn't focused on. As always, if you want to join the conversation during the week or whenever you listen to the episode, you can do so by joining our Discord. You just go to themidside.com/podcast or themidside.com. You click on any episode link and you can join our Discord channel. We had a great conversation this week about climate confessions, about the PSA for Sandy Hook, all of that stuff. It really helps make the show better. And as we get into Life on the Midside here next segment, you'll see another comment from Midsider Morgan. So hit up that Discord and help basically produce the show and become a part of the show. Before we go into Trailer Takedown, I want to talk about a movie that when the trailer came out, it seemed a little different than everything that was out. And I took a chance on it. So I went to see Brittany Runs a Marathon. It's an Amazon Studios picture that got a limited release in theaters. William, do you remember this trailer?
Yes, I believe I tackled it.
Okay, what made you tackle it?
I don't remember exactly. Maybe as you describe it, I'll be able to remember what it was. I think it was one of those I was on the fence, but I ended up tackling.
Okay, well, hopefully I can put you on the other side of the fence. So this movie is about this woman who's in her late 20s and her life is falling apart. And she goes to the doctor and finds out she's overweight, and the doctor tells her she needs to lose 50 pounds. The rest of the movie is all about her becoming a runner and then eventually running the New York City Marathon, and how she has to learn to take self-responsibility.
There's walkers, and there's actually a line.
Yes. Spoilers. Okay, jeez. I spoiled the theme of the movie. Yes. I'm probably going to go into pretty heavily spoilers for this movie, because it's a movie that even if you know what's going to happen, it's worth watching, which is what good art is, right? It's the concretization of abstract values in a way that you can only see them through the art, where you wouldn't be able to see them otherwise, because life is so diffused and so spread out that you don't get to see these machinations. But in a movie like this, you can see the more direct result of the values and of the mindsets. And that's really what this movie is about. As she gets in shape, as she prepares herself to run the marathon, you see the way people around her respond. You see the way she responds to herself. And as she gets a setback, you see how that affects her as well. And you see that her mindset change and everything. And the thing that's nice about
her setback, did some man oppress her?
No, actually. That's the nice thing about this movie is, I'll just flat out spoil it. So right before the, you know, like 4 weeks before the marathon happens, she gets a stress fracture in her leg because she was running too much. She was training improperly because she didn't have the right psychological approach to it, and it became an unhealthy obsession because she was using it to compensate for her lack of self-esteem. So she then is unable to run the marathon. And she spirals and gets worse and starts gaining weight again and becomes a really sort of bitter person about it. And it isn't until she learns that the running was never about the losing weight. It was about taking responsibility for your life. That's almost a direct quote from the movie, slightly paraphrased. Isn't until she learns that and internalizes it that she's able to run the marathon and finish it. And then when she does get hurt during the final marathon, or it seems like she gets hurt, she's able to pick herself up and finish. And that's the wonderful thing about this movie, is it's integrated. Everything in it is integrated around that theme, the idea of it's about taking responsibility for your life. Everything is about that. Every character is about that, where they're taking responsibility for their lives in different ways. And it doesn't at all go in the social justice direction. You know,
so
it
Justin,
does have
that's
a
great, because I think that was my reason for tackling, is that I thought this would be a empower women view of this and not a more artistic sort of personal but applicable to your life story.
No, it's definitely the latter. It's definitely personable but applicable to your life. I mean, yeah, it's a female main character, but that's because the person it's based on in real life, and they show video of the real Brittany at the end during the credits, was a woman. And there are other characters.
Are
you know,
sure she identified as a woman? You should be referring to her as they, according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
I'm assuming she does, because the movie refers to her as a woman and makes her character a woman.
Was it a male director, though?
There are elements of diversity in the movie. I don't think they're bad. I mean, there's one who's a divorcee, who's a former drug addict. That's a white woman. There's a gay guy who's her friend. She falls in love with an East Asian Indian guy. I'm not sure exactly what his heritage is. So there are elements of that. Her best friend early in the movie is Asian. I guess that would that be East Asian or West Asian? I don't know. I'm confused. But you know what I mean. I can't get all these straight. But
keep your Asians straight.
I can't keep my Asians straight. Okay, her roommate Asian is one I would think is pretty. We'll put it that way. That's how you can tell.
So those are the categories.
Yes.
Got it.
They're from that side of the continent, they're the good-looking ones. From the other side of the continent, they're... I don't even know what to say, because I'm...
Yeah, digging
I'm
the
treading,
hole deeper. Deeper and
I'm
deeper.
Treading, I'm digging a deeper hole here, and I'm not in the Shia LaBeouf.
Ladies and
so
gentlemen,
let's just sum this
I
up.
Am not a genius.
Correct. So let's sum this up. You shouldn't see this movie if you don't want to be inspired. If you want to just keep living your life, then don't see this movie. But you should see this movie if you want to see something different, if you want to support something different. Amazon Studios is actually not doing naturalistic social justice schlock, right? This is not the Kumail Nanjiani movie about his wife or girlfriend or whatever having cancer. This is an actually legitimately good movie. I think this is worth seeing.
Sounds awesome. Add it to my queue.
Yeah, at the very least, it'll be on Amazon Prime eventually, right?
I would hope so. Yeah, it better be.
Okay, so now let's move forward here. And as always, the trailers for Trailer Takedown are posted on the midside.com on the latest Saturday mornings. They were posted, I believe, like Friday afternoon this week. You can watch them before the episode. You can watch them during the episode. I think some people probably like to pause, watch the trailer, listen to what we say about it. Watch the trailer, listen to what we say about it. TheMidside.com/podcast for Trailer Takedown.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Living With Yourself is a Netflix comedy starring Paul Rudd where he goes to a Asian, I don't know if they're East or West Asian people.
Goes to is an this Asian an attractive or unattractive?
I don't know. We'd have to ask Robert Kraft this, right? And maybe this is what Robert Kraft was trying to do, right? So Paul Rudd's character goes to an Asian massage parlor and says, make me happy. And what turns out is he becomes super happy and he's not upset anymore. But then later he finds out he got split into two, a super happy, successful person and a really unhappy, unsuccessful person. And he has to figure out how to live with himself. Get it? Now, here's the thing, William. I am unsure about this show. On one hand, I think the premise is kind of inventive. It could be done in an interesting way. It could be a good way to talk about how to balance the positivity and negativity within you. And on that same hand, it's Paul Rudd, who I love. I always find Paul Rudd to be very funny. But on the other side, putting this in the hands of Netflix and whoever made this for Netflix doesn't bode well to me. For instance, I watched that show, The Island. It's very much one of the worst shows I've ever seen. It's terrible. The dialogue's terrible. The premise is terrible. It's literally awful. Let me put it this way. I watched the first episode. It was so bad. I go, okay, just next time at the gym, I'm going to put the next one on just so I can have something on while I'm lifting weights because I don't really want to have something on to pay attention to. It was so bad that when I was trying to pay attention to it, I had to turn it off. That's how bad it was.
So on a scale of Star Trek Discovery to Firefly, you're saying this is heavily on the Star Trek Discovery side.
I'm saying it's worse than Star Trek Discovery. Oh, that's what man. I'm saying. That's what the island was like.
I can't imagine it. It's inconceivable.
You don't have to imagine it. Just watch the island.
I might have to stand my eyes out if I do that.
The island literally turns into a screed against male rapists. That's what it turns into. There's a character that the main character calls the rapist every time she sees him within the first 20 minutes. Anyway, that's what I worry about with this kind of show. So I'm going to try and be more honest with my hugs and tackles. And what I mean by that is I think the element I haven't been taking into account when I hug or tackle is time. And as much as there's elements of this that I think are worth giving this a shot, honestly, with how long my list is and how much other good content is out there and how little time I have, I'm never going to be able to watch this. Tackle.
Ugh, tackle.
So this has an interesting hook. It looks like it's competently shot. So I have all the reservations that you just spoke of, but for in this case, I gotta give it a chance. I'm gonna watch the first bit of it and see if I detect any of these things. And just like I did with Lost, take the first exit ramp if I think it's gonna suck. So I'm gonna give this a very, very tentative hug.
Hug? Second trailer.
Dickinson is one in a long line of Apple TV's latest barrage on the or first barrage on the market. William, is Apple TV now they've decided to start doing content? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that was the big announcement back in March or whatever, and then now it's like actually happening, right? Like the Apple TV, or sorry, the Apple TV Plus service is now available. And if you buy any new iPad or iPhone, you get a year of it for free, which means a lot of people will be watching this content. And they're taking the opposite of the Netflix model, where they're being excruciatingly selective, but still throwing lots of money at the production value for these shows.
Well, they're clearly throwing lots of money at it. And before we get into that, I just want to say, with all these streaming services naming Plus at the end of them now, are we going to get one named C++ eventually?
I hope so.
So, yeah, they're clearly throwing a lot of money at this, because, right, there's one starring Jason Momoa, and then there's the one called The Morning Show starring Jennifer Aniston.
Apple has Oprah. That's not cheap.
Yeah. Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon are in The Morning Show together, and then you said Oprah. And now this one is Dickinson. It's starring Hailee Steinfeld as the poet Emily Dickinson. In this movie, I mean, we know what Emily Dickinson was like as a poet, so it's not too far off, but they've turned Emily Dickinson into that annoying girl in English class who was over the top feminist and over the top elitist because she thought she was super smart when she wasn't really that smart. And that's kind of who pushes Emily Dickinson in the classroom anyway. This is the latest, William, in all these trailers we've seen where we have to tell the backstory. Remember, we even had the backstory of the dictionary. It was like the biopic of the people who made the dictionary. Yeah. They've just decided to do this with Emily Dickinson now because it also hops on the other trend we've seen, these female empowerment movies. As much as I like Hailee Steinfeld, as much as, you know, as pretty as she is and as good of an actress as she is, this is just, it's not for me. And I would even argue it looks terrible. So with those two elements, this is a tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, this I completely agree with you. This looks like an in-your-face message, not a compelling biopic. And I think I said this last time we had a movie from this similar genre. I'd rather watch a documentary on the character than watch the dramatization of the character.
Oh, 100%. A documentary on Emily Dickinson would be much better than this.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someone who's so historical I'm thinking like Genghis Khan, right? Like maybe there's a story to be told there, right? A narrative story. I don't know if an author has such a dramatic and interesting life to make a fictionalized version of. So,
well, that's something we talked about before. I forget what episode it was, but we talked about how there's a new genre potential out there, and it's the blending of documentary and fiction in that way. Where that's something you could really do with a Genghis Khan, or you just said, or even an Emily Dickinson when she has all these poems to pull from.
Yeah,
where you can have part of it be documentary, where you have these literary historical experts talking about her, and then the other part that it cuts between is like dramatizations of her poems.
Yeah. I think that would be interesting. This, however, does not look interesting. So I am going to tackle it.
Tackle. Third trailer.
Dark Waters, William, if you want to talk about a movie with just a message, stars Mark Ruffalo as a corporate attorney for an energy company who he finds out has been poisoning a small town of 70,000 people for 20 to 40 years. I don't remember the number. And he suddenly flips on them and he wants to go against them because he's okay with destroying his entire life because this energy company is evil. They need to make their climate confession. Look, even if this is based on a true story, which I believe it is supposed to be, and I don't know the details of the true story, needing to take that and perverted and twisted into this whole corporations are evil, energy is evil, white men are evil, because if you noticed, all the people in this were all the people on the in the company were evil, were white men, right? Or was it that one black guy was part of the company, William?
I don't know, maybe he was the secretary.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it's just, this is so obviously message fiction. It's fiction that's written for the message. It's not fiction that's written to be good fiction, to be entertaining. So there's literally no reason at all I would ever see this. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, I generally tackle movies where the businessman is the cliched bad guy. So I think this definitely falls under that category. So obviously.
Tackle. Final trailer.
The rhythm section stars Blake Lively as an action heroine. I think when I read the description for this movie, William, I was very excited to watch this trailer. I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. Blake Lively as an action heroine. This could be cool. Maybe, you know, she's learned some things from her husband, Ryan Reynolds, and she's going to go in a new direction with her career. And then I watched the trailer and it's like this dour, naturalistic approach. And because she's like a victim, she starts kicking the crap out of people a little bit. The trailer was nowhere near as interesting as the description. So I have to tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, it needs more guns, explosions, and anything. So, no. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, when I read the description, William, I was like, okay, William's going to tackle the first three, and he's going to hug this one because it's going to have guns and violence. But there's not even that in the trailer.
No, there's no guns or violence. I don't know how you can call it an action movie.
So I triggered the all tackle rule. I tackled all four, so I have to pick one I would have to see if I was forced to. And I think you listeners out there are going to know my answer based upon the way I described the trailer. I'm a Paul Rudd fan. I think the premise has enough potential, and Netflix has had enough quality content that I would give Living With Yourself a try if I had to. All right, speaking of performances and plays and such that we don't ever want to give a chance. And speaking of message fiction. Let's talk about a story from Midsider Morgan in Life on the Midside. Up in Discord this week, Midsider Morgan submitted the following story as a response to Climate Confessions. They, because I don't really know if it's a man or a woman, because Morgan is one of those names. They shared this. It was pretty compelling. And I'm not sure I have a lot to say about it. I mean, I can go on several rants about it. I think I'll let William respond and then see in what direction he goes in. But I just want to read this for you all right now. This is Midsider Morgan. I have a friend whose son goes to public school. He is passionate about theater and performance in general. He's 9 and wants to become a professional YouTuber. I'm going to stop right there. The idea that nowadays people's kids' dreams are to become a professional YouTuber, I'm sure William would have plenty to say about that, but that's absurd to me. But anyway, continuing. He goes to an after-school acting class with 50 or so other students, and once a semester they have performance days where the students put on skits. I went along expecting some Pokemon mind-themed one act, but instead there were 4 separate performances. Just the idea of perceiving that there would be a Pokemon Minecraft one act, William, I find that funny too.
Yeah.
These were the most heavy-handed pieces of environmental propaganda I've ever seen, each with an explicit anti-human premise, and each bizarrely violent. In the first, sea monsters were waging war with sea creatures, only for both sides to suddenly stop fighting and realize that the real shared enemy they have is human beings who are polluting their home, and ended with one of the performers turning to the audience and lecturing them on why it is wrong to use plastic. Another depicted a civilization known as Wintopia, where all energy is renewable. The skit focused on a battle between the people of Wintopia and the, I'm trying to remember the term used, wind destroyers, I believe. The wind destroyers were dressed in black, clearly symbolizing coal and oil, and the play ended with them being captured by an 8-year-old Wintopia police officer wearing a riot helmet. He said he tried to remember the other 2 skits, but his or her final thought was, the most disturbing aspect was how every other parent was beaming and nodding while I looked around, all of them complicit in their children's indoctrination as some modern-day cultural revolutionaries.
Well, sounds like a typical VBS for us Southern Baptist folks. Vacation Bible School for you Catholics out there. It sounds like a normal VBS skit at the end of your VBS week or 2 weeks in the middle of the summer. Weirdly violent, check. Dogmatic, check. Preachy, check. Yeah, this isn't... I mean, it's disturbing. It's about climate and happening in public schools, but millions of kids do this sort of thing every year in Vacation Bible School.
William, isn't the difference to that, though, that you choose to send your kids to Bible school and that isn't something that every kid is expected to go to, required to go to? I mean, this is public school.
Is every kid required to participate in these plays? I guess that would make it different for sure.
That was the impression I was under.
Yeah.
You're saying this is just, you're saying this is specific to the acting class.
Yeah, I would hope. I mean, I would really hope.
I mean, this is one of the problems I have in general with the education system. And this is sort of the thing that really stuck out to me about this is they're not focused on teaching these young kids the form. They're not teaching they're focused on teaching them how to use the form. So no one knows how to be a good communicator anymore. Because they're not taught how to communicate. They're taught that you need to communicate to change the world and be a revolutionary, be a cultural revolutionary, as Midsider Morgan said. Isn't it the same thing here, William? How can these kids be expected to learn how to be good actors, be good directors, be good stage writers, if they're focused on the content of being a revolutionary? Even if that was the goal, wouldn't you become a better revolutionary if you learned the form first?
Yeah, it's hard because you look at that, you focus so much on the content being correct and being politically correct and teaching you see this a lot in classes. I'm stumbling around this. We have to bring climate or whatever, social justice, into every subject, right? Even fucking math, right? And this is just a continuation of that, right? Like, we have to bring in climate propaganda into acting, and it becomes less about the subject and more about the political education. I mean, isn't that what we're doing this in a free society, but repressive societies do exactly the same thing, right? I'm sure in North Korea, everything's about Kim Jong-un, right? In Shinto Japan, everything was about the emperor and the Shinto religion and the Bushido class. In Hitler's Germany, everything was about the white race and the Aryan superiority and blah, 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 right? So now, in today's political climate, everything is about climate and climate justice and social justice.
Well, what you said is exactly what is scary, is we seem to be finding reasons to oppress ourselves. This will just end that one there. That seemed like a good thought to end
to
on.
Oppress ourselves. How depressing.
Well, William, why don't you uplift us? And why don't you share, as we end this episode, what you learned this trip?
I learned that people aren't falling for the climate guilt as much as we thought. So, Justin, what did you learn this week?
I was actually going to say something similar, that maybe there is more hope out there than we think. Maybe that silent majority hasn't gone away yet. And maybe the social justice movement, this current cultural trend, has crested, and maybe we're finally on the downward slope.
Well, if you too are optimistic, make sure to share this episode with your friend through social media. Visit our website at patreon.com, where you can buy t-shirts and other various paraphernalia. Join our Discord server, which you'll get a link at the bottom of the show notes for the episode on themidside.com. And don't forget to join our Patreon, patreon.com/themidside. Thank you for all of our Patreons for helping us keep the lights on. And a big shout out to our liberty.me listeners. We're syndicated over there. Thank you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Elmozeski, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a climate day. You know, Justin, I'd be equally disturbed if someone made some sort of, like, pro-capitalism propaganda skits for kids to act out, as I am this nonsense with climate catastrophe and them acting out Avatar in very childlike ways.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, what kind of an adult are you? How do you feel about yourself that you're okay with going to this and having a 9-year-old just turn and lecture you at the end of the play? Well, no matter what it's about.
Well, 9-year-olds are expert on morality. We have learned this. The children are our future.